All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're here with our first live interview at NATA 2017. We're at the Dragonfly Max booth. Thanks, Clint and Brandon, for setting that up. We're talking again with Dr. Jim Berry, and I have Annie Nalipa here just helping out. So, Annie, say hello.
Hello.
And Dr. Jim Berry, say hello.
Hello.
I am welcome.
I'm the first guy.
You are the first one, which is... Which is good that I gave myself a little time because we were running a little bit behind on setting stuff up. But that always happens, right?
Yes.
All right, so Dr. Berry, is it okay if I call you Jim?
You can call me Jim, yeah, that's fine.
All right, so...
I respond to pretty much anyone.
So. The legend, Dr. Jim Berry.
The legend.
All right, so you are kind of like an icon on the secondary school Facebook athletic trainer group. It's kind of like every, I don't know, maybe, no disrespect, but like a grandfather, everybody just kind of looks up to you.
That's because I'm old.
Whatever it is, it works, right?
I have no life, exactly.
Well, there you go. All right, so one of the things is recently you got your doctorate, right?
Oh, it's been a while, actually. It's been about, probably about 8 or 9 years now. So.
Okay, and how long have you been in the profession as an athletic trainer?
30 years, roughly.
So you went 20 years without a doctorate. So give me a little bit of your timeline of becoming an athletic trainer, and then we can talk about your continued education.
Well, initially, in high school, I actually wanted to be a lawyer and was all intent on being a lawyer, going to law school, so on and so forth. And throughout high school, I was a student manager, statistician, so on and so forth. Wasn't athletically inclined, to say the least. So my junior year in high school, I had an opportunity to go to an athletic trainer camp at the University of Michigan and had a blast and just really realized that that was something that was really kind of a niche for me. My older brother had gone to Michigan, so it was always kind of a thing about maybe I could go to Michigan too. And so I went to camp, had a great time at camp, and the staff there at that time, Dave Ralston was the guy that ran the camp, and of course Russ Miller at the time was the head athletic trainer. And they said they noticed that I was pretty good at what I was doing and had an interest, and they said, you know, would you be interested in being a student trainer? And I said, heck yeah. You know, the opportunity to go work at Michigan, and Bo Schembechler was the football coach at the time, and so on. So applied, got accepted to the university, and went to school. Finished up there, was fortunate enough to get a job right out of college at Pioneer High School, which is right across the street from Michigan Stadium, as an assistant trainer with Lauren Cartwright, and worked there and taught physical education for a couple of years. And then unfortunately, we had some budget cuts at the time, and because I was a new teacher, I was one of the first people to get laid off. So substitute taught for about half a year and finished up the school year. And my college roommate, his dad was the comptroller of Myrtle Beach Air Force Base at the time. And he knew I was looking for a job. And he heard that Myrtle Beach High School was looking for an athletic trainer. They had had 5 athletic trainers in 6 years. And they were just tired of having this in and out athletic trainer business going on. So he said, you need to apply for this job. I know the principal. I'll put in a good word for you. So came down, interviewed, they offered me the position, and I took it, and was at Myrtle Beach for 22 years, and then 4 years ago, I left Myrtle Beach and came to Conway. It was time to move on. There were some things that happened personally and professionally that it was just, you know, you reach that time in your career when you've done all you can do at a particular place, or you don't get along with people as well as you used to get along with them, and so on, so... You know, you hear athletic trainers talk all the time about dealing with difficult coaches and so on and so forth. And that's kind of how it ended up at Myrtle Beach. We had some difficult coaching situations, and it just was time to move on. So been at Conway for 4 years and love it. It's a completely different atmosphere. The coaching staff appreciates what we do and so on. So and throughout that 27-year time, I've gone on and kind of in a non-traditional way advanced my education. Got my master's degree at the University of South Carolina in administration, educational administration, and did that in the late 90s. And then, like I said, about probably about 8 or 9 years ago, I wanted to go back and get my doctorate degree. Probably, and it's kind of funny, I tell people, really the only reason I got my doctoral degree was is because I got tired of other people looking down their nose at me that had doctorate degrees, and I wanted to prove that any Tom, Dick, and Harry can get a doctoral degree if you want to spend the money and do the work. So I went and got my doctoral degree learning theory, actually. Nothing to do with athletic training. I really haven't, my advanced education really has nothing to do with athletic training, which people are amazed by. And then after that, I said, well, you know, let's go back for another year, and got a postdoc in psychology. So I also am a professor at the local community college in Myrtle Beach and teach psychology there. So I've got a really wide-ranging career background. Even though I've pretty much been in athletic training my entire career, I've done a lot of different things, which I think is really important for people to understand, is that the more marketable you are as an athletic trainer, the more opportunity you're going to have to be able to do things professionally. So I know that if athletic training doesn't work out or I get tired of doing it, I have other opportunities to do other things because I've diversified my education background to be able to do that.
Again, Annie, feel free to jump in with questions there. But you're also an EMT, correct?
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Been an EMT since I was a senior in high school. Back in the day, and you may or may not remember this, being a little bit younger, but, you know, when I was growing up, one of the big shows on television was Emergency, Squad 51, and with Roy and John. And they were always my big heroes growing up. So when I got old enough to go to tech school and become an EMT, that was always something I wanted to do. So, and again, I also looked at that as an opportunity to have a job, do something, you know, that I enjoyed doing, liked helping people. So I've got it, and I've kept it all these years. I still renew it every 2 years, nationally registered, because South Carolina requires that. And, do I use the skills very much anymore? Probably not, but it's nice to have those skills if something does come up. You know, if we have a situation where somebody codes out or something, you know, I can do an intubation and I can start an IV and do those types of things that, right now an athletic trainer can't do. Now, with the new standards that are coming out, we'll be able to do that too. So, or at least some of those things. So,
with your tool belt of skills you now have, do you feel like there's one niche of it that you do use the most in your athletic training clinical practice now?
Honestly, I think my strongest suit, and I get this from my graduate work, is the administration side of things. I absolutely love the administration side of athletic training, doing that kind of stuff. I like the clinical side as well, but I've always viewed myself as being a really strong administrator in running our program and so on and so forth. And now that I have an assistant athletic trainer and have had one for the last several years, it's allowed me to focus more on the administrative side of the program, and it allows them to do more of the clinical side. And I still do the clinical side, but I think in our profession, a lot of times, especially at the secondary school level, that's the area that gets neglected the most. And then as a result of that, other problems arise with budgeting or with paperwork or keeping up medical records, so on and so forth. You know, we're here in this booth and they're medical records system that's available.
Right.
And that's the direction we're moving, is EMRs. And you'd be amazed, you guys probably wouldn't, but a lot of people would be amazed how much paper athletic trainers are still pushing. And you see on the Facebook page people constantly asking about what form do you use for this or what form do you use for that, and have you developed a form or can I get this form or whatever. And that's all well and good, but a lot of times, I know those of us that are older athlete trainers, we get kind of frustrated as well, because by asking someone else if I can have your form, you lose the ability to create your own form. And I think that's part of the administrative process. If you're coming into a new school and you're the first athletic trainer they've ever had, or someone, or you're following someone that didn't do a good administrative job, that's part of your job and your responsibility to create those forms. And certainly it's okay to ask for help and look at those things, but I think it's important to develop your administrative skills and work on developing that stuff too, because we've all had to do it. So I think that would be, you know, my strongest area.
I know whenever I started, again, this is, I just finished my 13th year in the profession. We were using Excel to make a little X or minus or X, whatever, if they turned in the form. And even when I came over to my current school, Pasadena High School, he was not even using a computer at all. So we were using Excel. I showed him how to do that because he is on the tail end of his career. You know, Bill's about to retire about 3 years. And so I do understand the amount of paper. But one thing I wanted to kind of clarify there, you said that by not creating our own forms, we lose administrative ability. So what if I take your form and I adjust it to my settings? Is that still a loss of administrative ability?
No, I think that that's fine. You know, what I get frustrated about sometimes, though, is we see folks that want to take the easy way out rather than saying, okay, I need this form. Let me create it. Let me figure out what's going to be well for me. But if it's easier for you to do that or you don't have the ability to do that, maybe that's not your strong suit, you know, then that's fine. But I think sometimes we take the we tend to take the easy way out rather than really taking the time to create something for ourselves that's going to be unique to our particular situation. So, but everybody has to do what works for them.
All right, go ahead.
So do you have, from the admin side of things, one tip or trick to give the young professionals coming into athletic training, especially in the secondary school setting, how to kind of survive?
I think my best advice is don't neglect that side of things. It's so easy especially when you're by yourself, which in so many cases that's the case. You're by yourself, you're thrown into the situation where you're the first athletic trainer in a school, it's your first job, you're trying to swim through everything. It becomes really, really easy when a kid walks in the athletic training room with some little minor thing to say, oh, well, I'm not going to write that down, or I'm not going to do an injury report on this, or whatever the case may be. It's the biggest mistake you can make in your career, because that little tiny ankle sprain or that little wrist sprain or whatever that you think is just really nothing that big of a deal, all of a sudden can turn into a big lawsuit. And I've had that happen in my career, where a young man came in with what was thought to be, and I didn't even see the initial injury. I mean, one of my college interns at the time saw it, and it was initially thought to be a little minor wrist sprain. Turned out to be a scaphoid fracture, and turned into a lawsuit, and we had to deal with it. And fortunately, we had a note about it. But there was the only note we had on it was in the injury log in our training room. She had never done an injury report. All we had was a record in our daily injury log that he had come in for a wrist sprain. So I think it's really important to pay attention to do those. Now, does that mean you should stop what you're doing and write a complete soap note every time you see a kid? No, you can't do that. I have sticky notes sitting all over my desk at the end of the day. You know, Joe Smith came in, right ankle sprain, did it in practice. You know, and those may sit there with the date and the time. Those may sit there for 2 or 3 days until I get an opportunity to put them into our EMR system. But they are going to go in there eventually. So I think it's important to write things down. I think it's important to have a daily injury log of who's coming in your training room. And I think the other thing from an administrative standpoint, especially nowadays in the market that we are working in, and the fact that we are working towards hopefully someday getting reimbursement from insurance companies, so on and so forth, we have got to start learning at the secondary school level, especially, how to appropriately track what's going on in athletic training room. And I know that a lot of folks are already doing that, but it's so, so very important. You know, we started in our school district this year, we hired 8 new athletic trainers last year. And in March of this year, we had a staff meeting, and one of the things that came up in that staff meeting, and I'm kind of lead athletic trainer for the school district unofficially, and One of the things that came up was that some of our administrators in the district were starting to complain about the fact that some of our new staff didn't seem like they had a lot to do. They're coming into work, because we work a flex schedule, they're coming into work at 11:30, and it really wasn't until 2 o'clock or so that they really started to see patients and so on and so forth. And there was some concern about whether or not they were working the amount of hours they should be working and so on. So because we track all of that, at the end of the year, and even at that time at that meeting, we were able to go into the system and say, hey, look, here's their hours. They're actually working more hours than they're supposed to be working. So even though it seems like they're not doing anything, they really are doing things. But if you don't write that down, you don't document it, you don't have any proof. You know, and the same thing when we look at your injury rates. We know this year in our school district that our injury rate was 5 injuries per 1,000 exposures. You know, how many high school athletic trainers can give you that data at the snap? You know, and that's important information to know if you're trying to convince a school board or a principal or a school district or even an insurance company to reimburse you or to give you a discount. We don't pay as much for our athletic insurance in our school district as neighboring school districts do that don't have athletic trainers, because we have athletic trainers. And we're able to show through our documentation and through our data that our injury rate is much lower than those districts that don't have athletic trainers. So it's data is going to become, just like we hear in education, data, it's all about the data. And we talked about this yesterday in one of the committees. I was on the district secretary's committee. I just finished up my term on that. And we were talking yesterday about the studies that are going on in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois, I believe it is, where they're looking at reimbursement. And we were talking about how important it is for those insurance companies to have that data in order to support whether or not it's feasible to pay for those services. And what the data has shown, in, if I remember my numbers correctly that we were told yesterday, the net amount of money that a clinic can make off an athletic trainer out in a high school, for example, or even working as a clinic-based athletic trainer, is somewhere around $85,000 a year. That's net. That's profit. So that's, you know, if from a business side, that shows a business owner or an investor that athletic trainers are a good investment. They're not going to cost you money. They could potentially make you money. So I think collecting data, having data is the direction that we all need to continue to move. And I think we're moving in that direction, slowly but surely.
I know one of the ways that we have captured the data is everybody, I say everybody, we try to get everybody that comes in, whether it's for a treatment or for evaluation, whatever, to sign in. And then they can click evaluation on the sign-in form. And then I have to go back in and add that in,
sure,
later.
Yep.
But they're at least signing in saying I was evaluated.
Absolutely.
Or I'm getting an ice bag, or I'm getting first aid, or whatever it is. But we try to have everybody that's coming in sign in so that we have those number of treatments, those number of kids coming,
yep,
in. And then going back to what you were saying about they felt like your coworkers felt like they weren't doing anything during that time. And I've heard that before. It's not about the number of hours. It's about what you're doing during those hours.
Exactly.
So maybe for 1 week, take a piece of paper and write down at 8:15, I entered physicals. At 8:30, I entered physicals. At 8:45, I entered soap notes. At 8:75, what am I thinking? At 9:15, did an injury evaluation for a PE kid or set up water for the field, whatever, and just document the whole week. You know, maybe that's a normal week for you, and then use that as part of your justification.
Absolutely. And that would be a super way to do it. You know, my father was a police officer, and throughout his career, you know, there occasionally you'd go out and ride around with him or whatever. But one of the things that most police officers still do, I think, is throughout their patrol shift, they have to keep a log like that, where it shows everything they did from minute to minute to minute, you know, so that there's no question about what you were doing during that time. And I think that, you know, that would be a super thing, especially for an athletic trainer that's trying to get more help in their facility, to show, hey, look, this is what my day looks like. There's just not enough time in the day. And you know, and that's a great example, too. You know, my assistant right now, we work Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 9 to 11 in the summertime. And either she covers it or I covers it. And, you know, for those 2 hours that she's in there, she's working on physicals right now because we've got all these physicals coming in. And that's what she does. And it's, she's lucky if she gets all of them in that 2 hour period that have come in the previous 3 or 4 days, you know, depending on what day of the week it is. So there's always plenty to do. And it's, I think, because people see athlete trainers standing around so much that they think we're not doing anything, when in reality we're doing a lot of stuff and they just don't see it. So
I think similar in our setting, we had the paper sign-in sheets, and with the time on it, you go at the end of the day and you see you had 12 people coming in an hour. And in the time of the rush, you might not realize that, but then you can look back and really quantify when your busy times and how many people you're actually seeing in a day. So that helps with that on the paperwork side of things. And then summer-wise, my athletes pop in here this last month, and what are you doing over the summer? It's so dead. Why are you even here? And they don't see that's the time when we've been revamping our whole policy and procedure manual, going through physical paperwork, still having kids trickle in because it's collegiate level or pretty much going year-round with one thing or another. And so I've kind of found that interesting that the kids and, you know, the coaches even, they don't know why we're there. And it's that education piece of, there's a lot of behind the scenes things that you don't get to do August through May, but June and July, you have that time to really catch up and get your feet underneath yourself so you can hit the ground running again in August.
Yeah, it just seems like more paperwork, but that extra paperwork of logging what we're doing during those times is beneficial in the long run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what's so great about EMR things like Dragonfly's doing and you know, all these other groups that are doing these things now, and you've seen this explosion. I mean, I can, you know, you think back 20 years ago when you came to NATA meeting and walked through the convention hall, you didn't see anybody that was selling EMR stuff.
Right.
You know, and now you walk around here and you've got 4 or 5 or 6 companies that are selling EMR stuff, and all of them have their benefits, and some are better than others and some are worse than others. And, you know, you got to fit whatever your niche is and so on. But one of the benefits of it is it makes your life so much easier. You know, and I'm an old dog, and I'll be honest in saying that, you know, the system we use, parts of it I use and parts of it not so much. You know, I'm still old-fashioned in the fact that you were talking about kids logging into the system when they come in the training room. We still don't do that. We use an old-fashioned Access database. We put the kids in. And I just haven't gotten to the point. Two reasons I haven't been able to do it. Number one, I don't have the technology to do it. I don't have the hardware because the school won't give me a computer to do it. But secondly, because of the fact you get those rushes, like you talked about, I'm afraid we're actually going to miss people. And those numbers are so important to me. I know that if I put them in or my staff puts them into the computer, I know they're in there. And you make a really interesting point, too, about the rush when you talk about people not realizing what we do. And I've always said this. One of the unique things about secondary school athletic trainers, and even at the collegiate level to some extent, depending on the situation, we don't have a normal clinical setting. You know, if you're in a PT clinic, and I've worked a little bit in PT clinics in the past, you know, you might see in a day 8 or 9 patients per therapist or athletic trainer or whatever in a day, 8 hours. We might see 12 patients
in an hour.
In 60 minutes, you know, and people don't realize that. And then over a period of 4 hours, we might see 48 or 50 kids for something. So we're seeing, you know, 4 times as many patients in half or a quarter amount of the time. And a lot of times people don't realize that. Well, yeah, we're kind of twiddling our thumbs from 2:30 to 3:30, but at 3:30, here comes the tidal wave, you know. So it's nice to have that little dead time, too, to be able to, you know, to be able to catch your breath and get ready to go and be prepared when that rush comes in.
Scheduling for us, with the way that kids have to get their classes for college, they're only offered at certain times, and so then that breaks up our day. And I know the high school timeline is a little different than the college university sitting timeline, but again, you might have a rush at our busiest time was 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. in the fall, and
sure,
then
yeah.
Again from 9 to 11, and then again at 4 and 5,
yeah.
Just and then trickling in with classes. But yeah, it's not scheduled times where it has a little more organization to it. It's a little chaotic, especially
exactly.
In those busy times.
Exactly.
All right, well, Dr. Jim Berry, I know you got lots of meetings. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's going to be the best way to do that?
Probably email me, drjimberry@gmail.com, drjimberry@gmail.com. And if you have a question or want to visit or chat or whatever, always happy to do that.
And again, if you're on Facebook, if you're in the secondary schools, look to get into the secondary school athletic trainer group. Dr. Berry is always on there, always commenting, sometimes helpful, sometimes not, you know. but you can email him, get a hold of him. And I know you said you want people to kind of create their own, but using your example of the value model is a really good tool for young athletic trainers or athletic trainers, like you said, who are trying to improve. So again, a great resource, and I really appreciate how you've helped all of us that are younger or less experienced.
Thanks, I appreciate it, and thanks for doing this podcast. I think it's awesome.
All right, that's great. Annie, somebody wants to get a hold of you?
Probably the best way would be email as well. Annie, A-N-N-I-E dot Nalepa, N-A-L-E-P-A @gmail.com.
All right, and of course, I'm Jeremy Jackson, Sports Medicine Broadcast, live at the Dragonfly booth at the NATA 2017 Expo. Dr. Jim Berry, Annie Nupa, Jeremy Jackson, that is a wrap.